Hello, everyone, and welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and this is episode number 284. Today, I'll be sharing a solo episode with you, and I have some thoughts on the hero's journey at the end of life that I'm going to discuss with you. Before I start into that, I just want to make a little announcement. If you're brand new to this podcast, just so you kind of have an understanding of what it's about, I am a retired hospice physician. And on this podcast, I share some solo episodes like I'm doing today, where I talk about some of the things I've learned through my journey on this path. And I also share interviews with experts in various areas around end-of-life care. So you'll find a variety as you look through the archives of topics that are covered here, and hopefully information that you're interested in learning a little bit more about. You can go to the show notes page for this podcast at eolupodcast.com. EOLUpodcast.com, and you'll find the archives for all of the episodes, all 284 episodes listed there. It can take you a while to scroll through, but there's also a search bar where you can enter a topic and or the name of a person I might have interviewed in the past that you've heard of, and you can search. And generally, it will help you narrow it down and find episodes about the topics that you're interested in. So I hope you find this podcast useful, and particularly today's episode, where, as I mentioned, I'm going to talk about the hero's journey at the end of life. So you may have heard of the hero's journey in the past. It's a model or a template that I've studied a lot and learned a lot as a writer. Every writing course or retreat or workshop I've gone to usually uses the hero's journey as a model to help us think about the characters that we're writing stories about and the experiences and adventures they have and how growth and transformation happens in literature for characters. It turns out, though, the hero's journey template, which you'll find basically in every movie, television show, book that you pick up to read, you'll find this template used over and over again. But it was actually first described by Joseph Campbell and based on Carl Jung's work with universal archetypes. So the reason this template is so powerful is because it actually plays out in each of our lives. It's actually based on the archetypes and the mythological journeys, in a sense, that all of us go through in life as we're learning and growing and transforming. And so today I want to apply this hero's journey template to the very last adventure of life, the dying process, and talk about how it reveals itself for patients who are at the end of life. Partly because I think this can be helpful for those of us who work with people at the end of life, but also for us to understand our own journeys as we age and as we ourselves are approaching later life. So before we go on, I want to let you know there is a handout that you can download and print for this talk today that might be helpful to you as a place to take notes. And it's on the show notes again at eolupodcast.com. Just look for episode 284. You'll see a link there to download the handout, and you can also print it. It's just one page, but it features the template that I'm using today for this talk. And it will be a place where you can add notes if you're interested and if you'd like to. So that's something that might be helpful. I wanted to let you know. I will be describing what the template looks like so you can visualize it in your own mind as you listen. But for some of us, it's more helpful to have something tangible and printed that we can look at. So I wanted to let you know. Again, eolupodcast.com, and it's episode 284 to find that little one-page handout. The material I'm sharing with you today actually comes from a course I created a few years ago that was going to be taught at Sophia University, but ended up being canceled. So I never actually taught the course. It was a one semester class that I was going to teach. And this is just a small little excerpt from that class. But I feel that it, as I said, I feel it could be helpful to all of us. So I'm kind of excited to share it with you. I'll start, first of all, by talking about the hero's journey. Some of you have probably heard it before, but just to refresh your memories and fill you in on exactly what the archetypal hero's journey is as conceived by Joseph Campbell. And this is a very, very brief summary of it. That initially we have our hero, the main character, who is called to go on an adventure. And in the typical hero's journey, the hero often refuses the call in the beginning, doesn't want to go on the adventure. And let's remember the movie, the initial Star Wars movie, and Luke Skywalker, when he first gets an inkling of going out and becoming a Jedi Knight, but refuses the call initially because he needs to help his uncle on the farm, and his uncle and aunt don't want him to leave anyway. So there's often a refusal of the call or a reluctance to accept this call to a new adventure. But then something happens that usually pushes the hero into a do or die situation where they really have no choice but to accept the adventure. And in Luke's case, his aunt and uncle were killed and the farm was destroyed. So he no longer had a home. And he really had no choice but to go ahead with his training as a Jedi Knight. In the process of this adventure, the hero meets some sort of mentor. For Luke, it was Obi-Wan Kenobi, who has knowledge and information that the hero needs in order to complete the journey. And the hero oftentimes is bereft, downtrodden, suffering a great deal at this point. And so the mentor is very helpful. And here's a little tip, a little teaser for what I'm going to be talking about next is all of us have the potential to be a mentor for someone who's going on their hero's journey. And that's why it's really important for us to understand that and to see our role as being a mentor. So Obi-Wan Kenobi teaches Luke Skywalker important information that he needs to know in order to become a Jedi Knight. He begins learning lessons along the way that help him grow. But at the same time, he also goes through a lot of tests and ordeals. It's not just an easy, straight path. Many things go wrong. There are many challenges over and over again. Things seem to fall apart or fail, and he has to keep relearning. He finds friends and allies along the way who also help him along with the mentor. Also discovers that there are some enemies, or sometimes there are forces working against him and against his growth. This is typical in all of these hero's journey stories, that there's a tension between allies and friends and sometimes enemies, which may or may not even be people, may just be situations that make it harder, that create obstacles for the person to grow. Ultimately, after, as I said, going through many ordeals, the hero is able to win a victory using the newfound knowledge. So think of Luke Skywalker finally facing down Darth Vader and defeating him, more or less, in battle. And finally, the hero returns back home transformed, a new person now, and goes back to life as it used to be, except as a new person. And so everything in life has been changed. So this is a very typical transformation story. And I think any of us, if you actually sit down and look at your life, you might see that you've been on many hero's journeys throughout your life history. Maybe something happened that caused you to drop out of college, and that was the initial disaster that forced you on a new adventure. And maybe you were despondent and in despair for a while, but you got an inspiration or met someone who suggested getting a job or finding a new path or becoming a volunteer or joining an organization, doing something new and different that began to teach you some lessons, that began to help you to grow. And maybe it wasn't an easy time. Maybe you went through a lot of ups and downs and difficulties and struggles with supporting yourself or having enough money for rent or finding stability in your life and your social life. But then perhaps along the way, you gathered just enough wisdom and just enough experience to help you make a bigger leap and a bigger transformation, to win a victory somehow over the problems that had been besieging you, so that you actually became a new person from all of the learning that you had done during this time of ordeal on your journey. So you may be able to look back and see many times in your life when those experiences happened. And this is what Joseph Campbell has been saying. We repeat these kind of tales over and over again in movies and stories because they are part of us. This story is part of our own history, and we love it. We resonate with it. It makes sense to us, and we love hearing about the hero coming out on the other side as a new person, transformed, because that keeps us inspired and helps us keep going forward and keep trying and keep struggling through all of our ordeals, and also looking for the mentors that we need along the way, finding our allies, facing up to our enemies as we're on this journey together. So that's how relevant the hero's journey story really is to all of us. It's part of all of our lives and has informed us throughout our lives. And you could spend a little time probably just tracing out some of the steps of the journey. And here's a really simplistic version of that journey, 4 steps. The hero goes on an adventure, learns a lesson, wins a victory with the newfound knowledge, and returns home transformed. So those 4 steps, that's the basic journey of the hero right there. So in my experience, I've spent quite a lot of time thinking about how this hero's journey applies to patients that I've worked with at the very end of life who are facing their own journey and their own challenge with accepting the dying process that they're going through. So I created my own version of the hero's journey, and I call it the sacred journey, actually, because I believe the dying process is a sacred passage from life into the afterlife. And so I like thinking of this as the sacred journey, but it's actually based on this hero's journey archetype. So I'm going to describe for you the sacred journey as I envision it for people at the end of life. It has 6 different parts to it. And so you can envision a circle, and we're going to move counterclockwise around the circle, but start at the very top of the circle. And that you can write in or draw a little box at the top of the circle. The circle would be high noon on a clock. If this were a clock face, it would be 12 is at the very top of the clock face. And that box is equilibrium. So that's the beginning of this sacred journey. It starts with things at equilibrium. So if you think about it, this is when you're just experiencing your ordinary day-to-day life. When you go through the motions day after day, nothing seems too different from one day to the next. You know what to expect. There are few surprises, and everything feels to be in balance. You're at a place of equilibrium where things are going pretty well. And suddenly, the next event on the sacred journey takes place. And so the next stage is the stage of crisis, when something comes out of the blue that you were not expecting, that completely disrupts your life, disrupts this normal equilibrium that you have had. And so on this little map of the sacred journey, move to the place where, say, the 10 o'clock would be on the clock face, and make a box there and write in crisis. So this is where the crisis happens on your journey. And it might be this crisis for someone at the end of life. This crisis represents getting a diagnosis of terminal illness, being told that there's no more treatment available for the illness, having to face the fact that death is surely going to come within a certain amount of time, and nothing more can be done about it. But this crisis could also be the death of a loved one. It could be any type of disruption in life. And as we talked about before, many, many things, a breakup, divorce, losing a job, all kinds of disruptions that upset the equilibrium in life, propel us into this kind of a journey as we have an opportunity to go deep within and explore within ourselves and to potentially grow and transform. So at this moment of crisis, envision this, that everything begins to fall apart in life. Suddenly the things that had been certain, things that you could count on, the routine, the normal, the ordinary experiences of life all begin to fall apart. And so this pulls us into the next stage, and this you would write in at approximately 8 o'clock on the clock face, the next box on this circle that you've drawn. And this third box or third stage is the stage of dissolution, meaning dissolving, falling apart. Everything seems to be fading away. The equilibrium is completely upset and disturbed, and the normal life is gone now, and everything has fallen apart. Now, this is something I get asked often, is that why do things have to fall apart for us to grow? Or do they have to fall apart? Can we grow if things don't fall apart? And I do believe it's possible that we can grow during times when everything's going well, times of great joy and happiness and love and celebration. But for significant transformation and transcendence to happen in our lives, often parts of us have to be rebuilt in a way. And so, you know, if you think about it, if you have a building that has an unstable foundation, you could add to that building, you could make the building taller, you could add things to it, you could work on it. But the more you add to the building, the more unstable it's going to be, because it doesn't have a strong enough foundation to hold and carry the new growth. So the reason I believe that falling apart is necessary if we're truly going to make a big leap in our growth and transformation is because sometimes we have to take apart the foundation. We have to get back to the foundation, and we have to strengthen it. We have to find where the weaknesses are, and we have to make it more stable and stronger so that it can hold the new growth that we're going to be doing in the future. And so think of it this way. Things need to fall apart in our lives for one reason, so that we can leave behind some of the old ways of doing things, some of the habits that we might have carried with us for years and years. Perhaps we have old beliefs that no longer really ring true for us, but we're still clinging to them. And when things fall apart, it's an opportunity to leave behind some of those things that don't fit us so well right now. And also, as I said, to explore that foundation that we're building our lives upon and make it sturdier. You've probably heard the old saying, I'm not exactly sure how it goes, but something about you can't build a tall building on sand, on shifting sand, because it won't support. the building that you're trying to create. So think of it that way. This is why sometimes we have to be disrupted. And disrupting equilibrium is what allows the opportunity for transformation. And in fact, the more disrupted our equilibrium is, the greater the transformation that's possible. So imagine a patient receiving a terminal diagnosis. That is one of the greatest disruptions you can conceive of. Having the news delivered to you that you are not going to live. You'll be here maybe 6 months. That's all the time you have left in life. That's a huge disruption. So the opportunity for transformation to happen during that adventure and that journey through those last days and weeks and months of life is huge, provided the right things happen. For one thing, that hopefully some sort of mentor comes along the way that can help with the transformation and support the person who's just gone through this terrible disruption, this terrible dissolution of everything that was normal, the falling apart of the equilibrium and the balance in life. So we find our patients, oftentimes those of us who work with dying people, we often enter into their lives when they are at this stage of the greatest dissolution imaginable. Things have completely fallen apart, not just for the patient, but for their families as well. And oftentimes they're going through lots of emotional ups and downs, dealing with, I still find Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's stages relevant here, because more than talking about grief, she was talking about the stages that patients go through when they've been given a terminal diagnosis, stages of denial, anger, bargaining, depression. All of those might be happening for people who've been through the crisis on their sacred journey and are now at that point of everything falling apart. And so there's like a fork in the road at this place. When people are at this point of falling apart, there's a choice point. Because it is possible for transformation to occur, particularly if there's the right amount of support and encouragement and external stability offered to that person. But for some people, that support isn't there. The mentor doesn't come, or they don't trust the mentor, or they are not able to listen to and hear the mentor. For some people, at that point of dissolution, when everything has fallen apart, there can actually be a regression. And so some people will actually go backwards rather than transforming and moving forward and growing, and may retreat backwards and may go back to old habits or older beliefs. Perhaps if someone used to drink a lot in the past, they start drinking again. They go back to perhaps even dysfunctional ways of being and regress back to that because it feels safer to them than risking moving forward. And some people might need to regress even temporarily for a while until they feel ready to move ahead. And remember, we talked about in the hero's journey, the hero often refuses the journey at first. The hero often says, I don't want this. I'm not going there. I don't want to go through this. I refuse. And so it's at this point when things are falling apart that some people may be looking for any possible way out of the journey, may just be in denial and not want to accept the fact that this journey could be happening. And so that's a normal part of this process. Hopefully for a person at this stage, though, there will be other people that can provide mentorship and can offer the right kinds of support and information that can help that person gradually and gently move back toward transformation in that direction. And you might be in a position to be a mentor for someone who's at this point. That's why I feel this is an important subject for us to talk about. So We'll review where we've come so far. The journey starts up at the top of your circle, your clock face. You can imagine in your mind at 12 o'clock with at a state of equilibrium where everything seems to be going well and things are fine. We move counterclockwise to the next stage, which is the stage of crisis, where things begin to fall apart. Something terrible happens, a tragedy, a terrible diagnosis. Something disrupts that equilibrium and begins the process of dissolution, of everything falling apart. And so the crisis is around 10 o'clock on your clock face. Dissolution is the next stage, which comes around 8 o'clock on your clock face. And you can even imagine arrows between those boxes, between equilibrium and crisis and dissolution. So we're at that point where perhaps we ourselves have fallen apart, things in our lives are in disarray, or perhaps we've met someone and we have a new patient or a client who's come into our lives for us to work with, and this is our opportunity to be the mentor. And so the next box you can create is at the bottom of the circle, at where 6 o'clock would be, meeting the mentor. And so the function of the mentor, and as I said, the mentor might be a person, but for some people it could also be reading a book or seeing a film or overhearing someone else talking about something. There could be lots of different experiences that serve as a mentor, but they are learning, teaching, supporting experiences that help the person who's in dissolution to begin to see how things might come together again. And what we're really trying to do is to help that person come to a place of acceptance of the journey so that they are willing to keep moving forward and keep looking for the next step or the next place possible, with the idea of transformation being somewhere out there in the future, further down the road in this journey. For some patients, the mentor might be the doctor or the clinic where the patient is going for treatment. And it's important to know that there are different types of mentors. There may be mentors in the clinic who are urging the patient to focus on still curing the disease, finding a cure, finding a way to live longer. And in that case, that's a mentor that might actually be working against some of the transformation that we're hoping to help patients find. If the patient's getting messages over and over again, you need to try new treatments and new drugs and keep fighting and keep struggling, it may work against accepting the journey, unless there's a mentor there who comes along to say, but at the same time, while you're working, while you're looking at these possible cures or more treatments, you can also be looking within yourself and understanding your own life and finding meaning within your own life, working toward healing the wounds of your life, even while you're still focusing on curing. So hopefully this person isn't only being offered opportunities to try to cure the illness, but also being offered opportunities for true transformation of the inner self and the inner life. And that may be the role that you play, being the mentor who supports the inner journey and inner healing for this person. And so I'm going to mention this now, but and we'll come back to it again later. One of the tools the mentor has that are the most powerful are stories. And so keep this in mind. We'll talk a little more about it, but that's one of the most powerful tools of a mentor, and not just the stories that you may have in your head to tell, but the patient's own stories, being able to utilize the patient's story in order to help the patient reframe it, reshape it, and envision a new story. So what happens for many people when they are going through a crisis is that the old stories they've told themselves, the old stories that they've used to explain life and how things work, suddenly are not helpful anymore. The old stories don't match up to the new experience that they're going through. And that is sometimes what precipitates a crisis for people, because they may have a story that says, if I'm a good person and I live a good life and I don't do anything wrong, then I will enjoy good health through all of my life. That might be the old story that they're carrying with them. Well, that story suddenly doesn't serve them anymore. It's not helpful to them anymore, because they know they were a good person, they believe they were, and yet here they are sick. And this old story might actually be hurting them, because they might be concluding that I did something wrong. I'm not really a good person. I'm bad in some way. I'm being punished, and that's why I'm sick. So the old story that used to make sense when they were at equilibrium and life was going well is not adequate any longer for the new situation that they're in. And that's where they need help from the mentor to utilize story and the possibilities of story and imagination and creativity to help the patient create a new story for themselves, a new story that gives them meaning in their life and in their illness. And as I said before, I'll come back to this idea of stories in a little bit later on in the talk. I'm going to talk about the power of stories and how to utilize stories with people that you're serving and working with. But I want to finish a little bit more of this model, the template that we're creating. So at the bottom of your big circle that you're drawing is the box for meeting the mentor, which may or may not be you, but ideally we're all preparing ourselves to be mentors for patients we work with, or loved ones or friends in our life, whoever might happen to need us in that role. So the next stage that the patient goes through is the ordeal itself. And we mentioned the ordeal in the hero's journey often has a lot of various challenges that the person has to go through. And sometimes the person finds allies and enemies and obstacles during this portion, the stage of the ordeal. So that's the next box. And you'll write that in at about 4 o'clock on the clock face, another box called Stages of the Ordeal. So this is the process where the dying person is really struggling with, how do I learn something new? And how do I see what's happening to me in a new way? So I wanted to mention 4 different stages that can take place during this part of the journey for the dying person, and so that you can be aware of them and also think about how you as a mentor might be helpful for each one of these aspects of the ordeal of the dying process. So the first is reframing suffering itself. And if you think about it, in our society, we demonize the very idea of suffering. We are a suffering-averse society. We gravitate toward pleasure and joy and happiness, and we don't necessarily have good tools for dealing with suffering. So when we encounter patients who are dying, or patients who are dealing with a great deal of physical and emotional suffering, we may not necessarily know how to help them, how to help them conceive of that suffering, and how to help them accept the suffering in a way without blaming someone or blaming themselves for the fact that they are suffering. So this is a really important step and stage for us to look at, the stage of suffering and how we can help reframe it. First of all, it's essential that we manage the physical symptoms as best as possible so that we minimize physical suffering, pain, and other symptoms. And that's essential for those of us who work with people at the end of life. That's number one. We have to do everything we can to help alleviate pain and other symptoms, because that will remove some of the physical suffering so that the patient can deal better with the emotional and spiritual suffering that's going on. And some of the ways that we reframe suffering itself for people we work with is to remember that suffering is universal. Everyone suffers in some way or another. It's also natural and a normal part of life. So you can look at nature and see suffering of some sort or another happening all around you in nature. Plants and trees die. Animals die. They get sick. They die. That's a normal part of life and how life has been structured. So suffering is going to happen for all of us. It comes to us at times in our lives, and that is a natural and normal part of our life cycle. The next is to recognize that suffering sometimes leads to new growth. So the death of one flower will fertilize the ground so that a new flower can grow in the next season. So suffering is part of that cycle, life and death and rebirth that can happen. And also to know that suffering is not necessarily meant to be fixed. It's not meant to be taken away necessarily, because often we can't alleviate or remove the suffering entirely. Suffering is meant to be navigated, but not necessarily fixed or removed. So we shouldn't focus our hopes and our thoughts and our energy on somehow removing the suffering entirely, but more focusing on how do we navigate this suffering that is here. So on this, the stages of the ordeal, the first is reframing suffering, helping people rethink their own process of suffering in order to see it in a new way. The second stage is strengthening connections for the person that we're working with. And that would be relationships with other people in their lives. It might be a relationship with a pet or with a garden, but strengthening the connections, bringing more allies into that person's life so that they become aware of a network of people and beings in their lives that care about them, that are offering support. And here for this task, you may need to help them focus on love. Who do they love? Who loves them? How can they strengthen the love that's there already? How can they find more love? And maybe they need to recognize love that's there that they haven't seen or noticed for a while in their lives. And maybe they need to begin to call upon those who love them to be closer and to offer more love and support. And here also, forgiveness plays a huge role. So those who are dying and working on strengthening their connections may need to talk a little bit about forgiving people that they have loved in the past but have had a challenge or some tension with. Maybe they need to talk about how to reach a place of forgiveness so that the loving connections can be even stronger that they have in their lives. So this number two task during the ordeal of the dying process is strengthening connections by using love and forgiveness, emphasizing those. The third task is finding meaning in life, finding meaning today, here and now, with life just as it is, even in the midst of illness, even in the midst of decline, even while dying, finding meaning. And so learning how to live in the moment is one of the most important steps here, how to appreciate each moment for what it is and make the most of every moment and find joy and love in every moment. And also perhaps considering purpose, like what has my purpose been, and is there a purpose that's even being served by this process, this ordeal that I'm going through right now? So that's the third task of this ordeal. And then the fourth task is to face the fear of death, which is a fear for each one of us. And this entails being able to have conversations and discussions about the fear of death and telling stories, asking the patient to tell stories of any experiences they've had with death in the past. What have they learned from those experiences? Has it been helpful? Has it hurt them? And perhaps telling them some stories of your own that can help them as they really look at death and begin to contemplate the fact that this is what ultimately awaits them. This dying process, dying in the physical form, to move on to whatever is there for them on the other side of life. So again, just to reiterate, during this stage of the ordeal that the patient's going through, there are four tasks: reframing suffering, strengthening connections, finding meaning even within illness and dying, and four, facing the fear of death. So those are the tasks as a mentor that you will work on with the person you're sitting with and spending time with who is facing death and dying, those four tasks. Again, that comes during this stage of the ordeal. So the next stage that comes is, so on your little graph of the circle that you're drawing, place an arrow up from stages of the ordeal to the next little box that you're going to draw. This is the sixth box on your graph, and it comes at 2:00 on the clock face. And this box is for healing the shadow. So this is an important step in the process of helping this person toward transformation. The shadow represents some of the obstacles, the enemies perhaps, that might be sabotaging growth, might be sabotaging this person from accepting the fact that they're dying, from moving forward with strengthening connections with love and forgiveness. If there are old shadow issues or wounds that are undermining the person's work toward growth. So it's important to be able to listen, again, listening to stories of the past, because that's where shadow issues might arise and you might be able to hear about them, and maybe you can help lead a person towards some healing of old wounds. And it might be a person who has always felt unworthy all of their lives, never believed that they were worthy of having anything good happen for them. And that now that they're facing death and dying, it seems like, yep, that's exactly what I figured would happen to me, because I don't deserve to have anything better turn out for me in my life. Something like that. That represents an old shadow, an old wound, and it can be explored by just asking for stories. How did you come to believe that about yourself? What happened in your life that caused you to believe that? So this is where, again, part of getting through the ordeal and helping a person toward transformation might be healing the shadow. If it turns out that this person has these old wounds that are creating negative, unhelpful stories for them about their life and about who they are as a person. So be listening and be aware for the shadow issues that are coming up and making themselves known. And so again, for healing the shadow, stories are one of the most important modalities that we can use as we're working with people. And healing the shadow is really one of the greatest opportunities for transformation and transcendence to ultimately occur. And it goes hand in hand with those four steps I mentioned before, particularly strengthening connections, love and forgiveness, and finding meaning. When you can help someone get past the obstacle of their shadow issues, they have the greatest chance of finding forgiveness with another person in their lives, forgiving themselves for mistakes they've made in life, and of actually beginning to see how things have come together together in life, and that maybe what is unfolding in life for them right now is okay. Maybe it's all right. Maybe this dying process, which was going to happen no matter what anyway, because all of us are mortal and all of us will face dying, that maybe it's okay to accept it, and maybe it's okay to be on this journey willingly and to be looking for as much meaning and love as possible in every moment. So that is the possible outcome of helping them through the ordeal and helping them to heal the shadow and finally finding transformation as they're going through the dying process. So because I mentioned again, for healing the shadow, stories are extremely important. So let's talk a little bit about how stories are helpful. And the first thing, there's been some research done on stories, and we know that stories that engage our emotions actually help release oxytocin, which I've talked about a few times before, which is, we call it the love hormone, because oxytocin helps us feel more positive and more loving toward other people when we have higher levels of oxytocin. And so telling stories that engage the emotions can help with this oxytocin release, help us feel more connected to other people, and also help us even find more empathy for others in our lives. So telling and listening to stories, it's good for us. It can help us create a connection with our patients when we're listening to their stories and hearing them, because we will have an oxytocin release, but it also helps the patient feel more connected. They feel connected to us and have the opportunity to feel more connected to other people. So that's one of the first benefits of storytelling, this oxytocin release and the empathy that it helps create. Stories also teach us about the past. So stories that the patient tells us will often give us clues about their shadow wounds, or clues about how were they hurt in the past, and how is the pain they're still carrying interfering with them finding peace as they're working toward the end of life and facing it. So we can learn a great deal about history by listening to stories. Stories also, the more we start telling stories, the more our memory begins to open up and grab onto other details and find other information that may have been hidden for a while. So stories enhance our memory function, and then, as another benefit, reveal what has been hidden for too long. The stories can help us open up what's been maybe stored away in the subconscious for a while and bring that to the surface so it can be looked at. Stories can also help us make sense of life, because sometimes when we're telling a story, we're actually like fitting pieces of a puzzle together that begin to create a picture. It can help us find greater understanding of what has happened in life and what's all this about. And then storytelling also activates creativity and imagination. Sometimes for any of us to transform, we have to be able to imagine that we could be different, imagine that we could grow, imagine that we could move forward, that we could even transcend the difficulties we're having right now and become a new person. So storytelling activates our creativity and helps us imagine something new happening in our lives. So if you are a mentor and you want to utilize storytelling with patients in order to help them with these tasks, the stages and healing the shadow, here are a couple of steps to remember. And the first of all, the most important thing, is to be a really good listener. You need to ask people to tell you their story, and then you need to tune in and listen. And I call it intuitive listening, because you listen with your whole self. It's not just your ears taking in the sound of the words they're saying, but you're listening with your whole self. You're sensing with your body what the person is telling you, what the emotion they're feeling that underlies it. And you're connecting with them deeply and activating your own intuition, even to suggest to you the next question to ask, or what should you ask them to clarify, or which direction should you ask them to go as they're telling you your story. So first of all, deep intuitive listening is essential. You may have to practice that to get good at listening without interrupting too much and with asking the right questions at the right time. Sometimes we have a tendency, we have a list of questions in our head, and we may interrupt the patient to ask the next question before we finished hearing the whole story. So it takes some practice to learn how to tune in and really listen deeply and patiently. So the second part of utilizing stories is learning how to reframe stories. And so I mentioned this before, part of reframing suffering for one thing, and giving the patient a new perspective or a new way of looking at what happened to them. And so I had a patient once who told me he had always been unsuccessful in relationships. He had had a number of girlfriends, none of the relationships worked out, and he always ended up having to walk away from the relationships, and none of them were successful. And through our conversation and through listening to each one of these stories, I was able to perceive that he was always looking for something different. And what we were able to reframe is not that he was a failure at relationships, but that each relationship taught him something. From each relationship, he learned, there's something that I need that isn't being provided by this relationship. I need to keep looking until I find a relationship that serves all of my needs, that gives me what it is I'm looking for. So we were able to reframe these previous relationships he has had, not as failures, but as learning experiences that were helping him discover more and more of what he needed from a partner, and helping him move closer and closer to finding the partner that would be the best for him or right for him. So he no longer had to look at those relationships as failures. Each one was an important step on his journey of finding the right partner for him, finding the person he could be with. So that's an example of reframing. It's taking a story the patient tells from a negative perspective, finding a new way to look at it that casts a more positive light on this story. And reframing is really essential for helping shift someone out of their feeling of hopelessness and depression and negativity into a more aspirational and positive point of view about life and about how their life has been lived. And reframing can also really help someone see the meaning of the experiences they have had in the past. Another essential component of storytelling and story listening is finding common threads. And so when you're helping someone to think about what has the meaning of their life been, when you hear multiple stories from that person, you might discover, gosh, every time in every story, there's this element that keeps cropping up, like this person ends up every time doing this one thing. It's part of every single story that they've told. And the person telling you the story may not recognize those threads, may not see the commonalities in their stories. They might not even hear it for themselves when they're telling you the story. But when you see it and recognize it, I begin to point out the common threads. For example, my patient who thought all of his relationships were a failure, I could find the common threads of what was similar about each one of the relationships he had had. What was the common thread that ran through each of them? And what could he learn from that by recognizing the thread? So I'll reiterate, intuitive listening, be able to reframe stories and show a new positive perspective on the story. Find common threads in the stories that were told, because often they are keys to deeper meaning. Next is to be able to share with the patient what I call the galaxy view, which is the big picture view of the story. Sometimes patients get lost in the small picture, the details of their story. And why did this person say this? Why did we do this one thing? Why did this one small thing happen? When what they really need is to be able to take a step back and actually look at that particular story from a much bigger perspective. Like, well, what role did that episode play in your whole life overall? Even what role does it play from an even bigger sense in the existence of the universe? Did this experience you have a bigger purpose? Was there something greater about it than just the fact that someone insulted you or hurt your feelings? Is there something bigger? So this is the galaxy view or the big picture view, trying to take the person out of looking at it from too small a lens, through too small a lens or too small a perspective, into seeing it as a bigger story. And then lastly, when you utilize stories, you might also be able to share a teaching story. And this is something I would encourage you to do, is to gather in your own mind little stories, perhaps a story from your own life, something that affected you. And it doesn't have to be, it actually, the simpler the better and the shorter the better. So don't spend a lot of time going into a long, detailed story of your life, but maybe something very simple that you could share with the person that had meaning for you that reflects back on their story. Because patients who are going through this ordeal and this process are oftentimes at what I call a teachable moment, when they're really looking for the meaning, looking for the lessons, wanting to learn or see something. And it might be that the very best way you could help them see it is rather than trying to help them relook at their own experience, is to tell a story that's related of something similar that happened to you or happened to someone they know, because it takes them out of being stuck in the middle of their own negative, depressing story. It would engage their empathy by releasing oxytocin, especially if your story that you tell is emotionally engaging. And so I can tell you one thing, I've told many people over and over again, the story of the fact that when I took care of my mom when she was dying, and my mom and I had always had a tense relationship with a lot of conflict between the two of us, but two nights before she died, we had this really interesting encounter when suddenly, for the first time ever, she and I both saw each other. We saw each other in a deep way. We saw the truth of each other. And we had this moment of incredible forgiveness that happened between us. And I've told that story many times, especially when people don't believe that forgiveness is possible or think, oh my gosh, we could never get through this. There's no way we would ever be able to forgive all the things that have happened between us. I mentioned that little story, and I tell the details a little bit of how it happened, but that story just creates the vision, the possibility in people's minds that forgiveness can happen in an instant one tiny little experience between two people can open both of them to suddenly see each other in a different way and suddenly forgive one another. So I share that personal experience because I want people to be able to imagine that that could happen for them too. I want them to know that it's possible for forgiveness to happen in that way. So that's what I mean by share the tiniest little story that just offers hope to someone or helps them imagine something good happening, helps them imagine transformation and healing and love and joy. So you might think about what little stories do you have in your own life experience or working with other people, a story that you could tell without betraying someone else's confidence or, you know, sharing information that shouldn't be shared, like a person's name or anything identifying about that person, but just the tiniest story that you could tell that could provide that kind of inspiration. That is how you can be the best possible mentor to someone who's going through this sacred journey, the hero's journey at the end of life. So again, I'll just reiterate these. Remember intuitive listening. Remember to reframe the stories you hear from the person telling them to you. Find any common threads that are there in the stories. Help them take the galaxy view or the big picture view of their stories, and then share a teaching story. So as I said, be collecting those stories. And maybe it's even a story from history, a story that you've read about something that happened in the past, you know, that is inspiring to you that you could tell briefly. I emphasize that briefly. Because we don't want to be spending too much of the time when we're with someone else telling our own stories. We want most of the time to be spent in listening, but there's value to being able to share those teaching stories. So here are the six little boxes around the circle of the sacred journey. It starts at a point of equilibrium, moves through crisis, then dissolution, then meeting the mentor, stages of the ordeal, healing the shadow, and then back to equilibrium, except it's a new equilibrium. It's a new transcendent equilibrium, a place that has never been experienced before, a place of transformation. And so that is ultimately the goal of this sacred journey and the goal for all of us who want to be mentors for someone who are on the sacred journey, but also the goal for our own journeys. And so I want to tell you, for me, I perceive my role in doing this podcast in a sense of trying to be a mentor to the best of my ability, providing you with stories and information and even learning about the work of other people that might mentor you as you are on your own journey. Your journey of transforming and transcending and becoming perhaps the best possible healer or mentor or support person or loved one that you can be in your life. And I certainly hope that in some way the things I share do end up being of use to you. That is my goal, and that's what I'm hoping to accomplish by putting these podcast episodes out there for you. So I hope you found today's conversation about the hero's journey at the end of life to be of use. If you enjoy this content, please share it with someone else who might benefit from it. You can also go wherever you listen to podcasts and leave a review if you feel inclined to do that. And you can support the podcast on my page at Patreon, patreon.com/ EOLU. If you'd like to make a small contribution, as little as $2 a month to help keep the podcast on the air. So I will be back next week. I'm actually going to be sharing an interview with Janet Carroll about laughter yoga. So I'm looking forward to that. So tune in next Monday and every Monday for a new episode. And until we're together again, remember that we're here for love. That's really what all of this is about. It's just about love. So face your fear, be ready for whatever might come next, and just love each and every moment of your precious life. Bye-bye.